What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Federal Appeals Court has refused to reinstate President Trump's ban on travelers from 7 predominantly Muslim nations. Three-judge panel unanimously declined to block a court order on a lower court that suspended the ban and allowed previously barred travelers to enter the United States. Bob Ferguson is the Washington State Attorney General who brought the original action to stop the travel ban to a lower court in his state.
The president does have a choice. He can continue to fight this, or he can tear up this executive order and start over. I would strongly encourage him to consider the latter course of action.
President Trump reacted to the appeals court ruling by tweeting, "See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake." Critics said the Trump travel ban discriminates against Muslims, and they question its value as a security measure. Turkey says a Russian airstrike has accidentally killed 3 Turkish soldiers in northern Syria. Military statement said the Russian military was carrying out an operation targeting the Islamic State at the time of the incident. Russian President Vladimir Putin offered his condolences, both sides agreeing to step up their military coordination in Syria. While the South Sudan government prepares for a national dialogue early next month, one high-ranking United Nations official said the talks could be undermined by the ongoing violence in the country. Adama Dean, the UN Special Advisor to the Secretary General on the Prevention of Genocide, told VOA South Sudan in Focus that the Salva Kiir administration should focus on creating meaningful dialogue that includes the opposition as well as a path to justice. This is VOA News. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, told the Senate Armed Services Committee he believes the U.S.-backed Afghan forces are in a stalemate in the 15-year war. He said to break that stalemate, he needs a few thousand more soldiers to accompany the 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Nicholson said offensive capability is key to breaking the stalemate, and while the additional U.S. troops would be involved in training, advising, and assisting missions, the Afghan Special Forces and Air Force would be vital to the success.
Of the 98 U.S. designated terrorist groups globally, 20 operate in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, along with 3 violent extremist organizations. This is the highest concentration of terrorist groups anywhere in the world, which underscores the importance of our counterterrorism platform in the Central Asia-South Asia region.
Senator John McCain suggested that Russia is playing a significant role in Afghanistan, and Nicholson agreed, saying that Russian meddling this year has become more difficult. He also said Russia has tried to publicly legitimize the Taliban. A senior Trump administration official says a meeting at the White House and a golf outing in Florida are intended to reassure Japan's leader the Trump administration stands with its ally, shoulder to shoulder. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has arrived in Washington, becoming the second foreign leader to officially meet with President Trump. Jeffrey Hornig, a fellow at the Washington-based Sasakawa Peace Foundation, on Mr. Abe's agenda for this visit with President Trump.
Trying to build the trust with President Trump, given some of the campaign rhetoric he said on the campaign trail, really caused a lot of anxiety in Japan. Another one is to pick up the pieces from the TPP that President Trump killed. And toward that end, there's rumors that Prime Minister Abe will be bringing a package of some sorts that could create up to 700,000 U.S. jobs through some private-public investments.
Mr. Abe is eager to get off to a good footing that when President-elect Trump, he flew to New York to meet with him in November shortly after Mr. Trump's election victory. President Trump told Chinese President Xi Jinping in a telephone conversation late Thursday, U.S. intends to honor the One China policy by acknowledging China's position that it has sovereignty over self-ruled Taiwan. Before his inauguration, Mr. Trump questioned the need to observe the One China policy without the U.S. receiving some incentives from Beijing. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, February 10th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. There was a fist fight on Thursday in South Africa's parliament as President Jacob Zuma gave his annual address to parliament.
Zuma is no longer a president that deserves a respect from anyone. He has stolen from us, he has collapsed the economy of South Africa, he has made this country a joke, and after that, he has laughed at us.
That's far-left politician Julius Malema, the leader of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party, rejects allegations he's involved in a drug trafficking ring. Somalia's new president outlines a program for his first 100 days in office, and the body of the late Congolese opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi may not be coming home soon from Brussels.
We have said that before bringing the corpse of President Tshisekedi, we should have a new government. From the 31st December 2016
accord. Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. Zimbabwe authorities released a pastor who had been critical of President Mugabe, and the parents in Cameroon's English-speaking regions prevent their children from going to school. Those story plus Samson Omale's post in our Black History Month facts and contest are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Jacob Zuma's annual address to Parliament was greeted yesterday by high drama in the form of an actual brawl as rowdy, contentious red uniform opposition members fought burly white-shirted security guards after more than an hour of bitter ranting, obscenities, and vicious vitriol. Outside the building, police fired stun grenades and tear gas at protesters. Mr. Zuma is facing low approval ratings as the nation's economy drags and his popularity appears to have bottomed out. As VOA's Anita Powell reports, such tension is not uncommon at the speech, which has become an annual showcase for political fireworks.
President Jacob Zuma's rhetorical positions and policy goals are rarely the highlight of his annual address to the South African people. The speech is a chance for the president to discuss progress the government has made and its policies for the coming year. But in recent years, speeches have been stopped by jeers from opposition members, expulsions, walkouts, and even police entering the chamber to try to restore order.
There's nothing that Zuma deserves from us in a form of a respect. Zuma is no longer a president that deserves a respect from anyone. He has stolen from us.
Honorable,
he has collapsed
members.
The economy of South Africa. He has made this country a joke. And after that, he has laughed at us. We cannot allow Zuma to do as he wishes in this country. We are not going to allow that.
We are doing what we are doing
because we do not recognize him as our president.
Remove
he
the
is not
who have
our president. Please.
That is far-left politician Julius Malema challenging the increasingly unpopular president during last year's address. This year, the presidency has summoned 441 soldiers to parliament for what it says is safety and security. That has drawn sharp criticism from opposition politicians, with Malema, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, calling the move a declaration of war. Professor Susan Boysen of the University of the Witwatersrand says the drama is not entirely bad for the president.
In some respects, it seems almost as if President Jacob Zuma has been trying to distract attention from the content of the State of the Nation address. And that is especially through the developments in the last day or two around the security arrangements in particular.
Unemployment has risen overall since he took office in 2009. South Africa's currency, worth 8 rand to 1 US dollar when he became president, now hovers around 13 rand per dollar. And its instability has been neatly in sync with Zuma's unpopular political moves, like his decision to go through three finance ministers in a week in late 2015. Independent political analyst Ralph Matega says he expects Zuma to revisit the familiar issues of poverty, unemployment, and persistent inequality. But he also notes the speech is an opportunity for Zuma to define his legacy and defend his party. Zuma's successor as leader of the ruling African National Congress will be chosen at the end of this year and will likely be South Africa's next president in 2019. But the ANC no longer holds the supremacy it claimed when it took power in 1994. In last year's local election, it lost key municipalities to the opposition.
What is maybe different about this year's State of the Nation is that the ANC-led government will have to define itself, explain itself as to how it has performed in the last 21 years.
Matega will see the speech in person because he says it is the little details in the chamber that really matter. Who sits where, who walks the red carpet in which order, and how certain top political figures react. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The new president of Somalia, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo, has been outlining what he would do in his first 100 days in office. He spoke with Philistine Imam of VOA Somali Service.
My feeling is something I cannot imagine because I have been working hard for the past 15, 16 months and I have been campaigning in Somalia as well as in Nairobi in talking to all politicians, particularly members of parliament. And as a result of that, resulted my victory last night.
Mr. President, what's your plan for first 100 days in your office?
First, I have to appoint a new prime minister whom will introduce his plan and his strategy as to how he will tackle the security issues and to improve the humanitarian situation in Somalia. As you know, there is a huge drought everywhere in Somalia, which definitely will produce a famine. So we have to appeal to the international community to provide humanitarian assistance to those affected people in Somalia. So that new prime minister definitely will put together his cabinet within hopefully 30 days after I appoint him or her, even though I haven't decided yet. So he will introduce his plan of action within the next 100 days. Inshallah.
And Somalia is one of the seven countries which President Trump banned to enter in U.S. How you feel about it as Somali president and as a U.S. citizen?
Well, it's part of my responsibility to talk this issue with the U.S. government by conveying our message to the president and his government that the Somali people are hardworking people who raise their families in the United States. So we will see if he can change that policy and exclude Somalis from that list.
That's new Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo speaking with Philistine Imam of VOA Somali Service. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the body of the late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi may not be coming home soon from Brussels, where he died a week ago at age 84. Martin Fayulu, a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement, says before Tshisekedi's body is brought home, a new government must be formed out of the December 31, 2016 peace accord because Tshisekedi played a leading role in bringing about that agreement. That agreement calls for President Joseph Kabila to remain in office until elections are held later this year. Fayulu says in the African tradition, when a chief dies, the people must reconcile before he is buried.
We have said that before bringing the corpse of President Tshisekedi, we should have a new government from the 31st December 2016 accord. It's very important because the government cannot bury the corpse of the President Tshisekedi. Tshisekedi fought for the change. He fought for the accord. And we want before his corpse to go, we have to see the change. That change for what he fought. We cannot accept that the current government of Mr. Badibanga to bury the corpse of Tshisekedi. We cannot accept that.
Mr. Fayulu, what does bringing the body of Mr. Tshisekedi, bringing it home, what does that have to do with the implementation of the agreement and the formation of a new government?
We said that the Congo, we are apart. We are not together. We are not reconciled. And in our customs, when the chief, the guy like Tshisekedi, passed away, we should have a new government so we can bury him in peace. We can reconcile the people. And the whole Congo needs what we are saying is that. And we are not playing a game. We are not turning around. We want just to recognize the work of President Tshisekedi.
Is it true that you are making this demand about President Kabila and the government, the formation of the new government, because you do not recognize President Kabila now?
I'm saying this. Anybody having any position today in this country, this position is due to the December 2016 accord. Mr. Kabila, if he's there today, is because of that accord. And apart that accord is nothing. That's what we are saying. If they don't want to apply to implement the accord, okay, we back to square zero, where nobody recognized Mr. Kabila. We have to apply the accord. That's it.
Mr. Fayulu, is it true that the opposition, the Rassemblement, or the party of Mr. Tshisekedi has asked the government to build a mausoleum for the late Tshisekedi in the center of Kinshasa? Is that true?
Yes. Well, we said that, yes, because this is the request of the people of Congo. This is one of the prerequisites that we have put in place, that we need the corpse of President Tshisekedi to be somewhere where people can come all over the world and visit the place, so people can recognize that he was a true hero.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 10th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's information minister has expressed concern after parents in the English-speaking parts of the country prevented their children from going to school. And this follows weeks of protests by teachers and lawyers that have led to the closure of schools in the regions. Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari tells viewers Peter Clotty that it's unfortunate that the education of children will be sacrificed for politics, which he says isn't good for the country's future leaders.
The nation as a whole has been or is taken hostage by a handful of politicians who have politicized such a problem. We condemn the fact that they prevent the tomorrow's leader of our nation to acquire the necessary knowledge to be at the helm of this nation tomorrow. It is wrong to do it. Just because the government is ready to negotiate, the government says that no matter what the problem, it is always possible to find a solution provided that people of goodwill come together, team up together, sit around the table. You examine the problem.
I understand where you're coming from. However, some of these English-speaking areas are saying that even the very constitution you are referring to is not being respected. And they also said that internet and communication have been cut to the English-speaking areas because of concerns they've raised for the government to address, which they said the government has not addressed, and that concerns that they want negotiations, the government has flatly refused by choosing their own mediators to negotiate with them, and that they don't have a government that has the goodwill to politically negotiate to resolve their concerns. What do you say to that?
It is completely wrong. It is completely wrong. And this assessment of this situation is wrong and biased against the government. Let me put it in this way. As far as the Constitution is concerned, when you raise the issue of federalism or secession, these are the two major problems for which nobody in this nation, including the head of state, has the solution. When you raise the issue of federalism or to secede, you want to shatter our unity, you want to break into pieces the nation, there is no possibility to negotiate with those who would like to break our unity and common willingness to live together.
They are activists. Some of the leaders of their group are being arbitrarily arrested, even in the capital, Yaounde. At the universities, they are being harassed, and that the government has a policy, an unwritten policy, of francophonizing the English-speaking country, and that is the problem they are having.
My friend, please. Some few years ago, I was unable to say a single English word. I am 70 years old. But I made it a point of honor to communicate in this marvelous language, first of all. So the language shall never be a stumbling block or the problem that, or the hurdle that we cannot clear on our way.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says allegations that its leader, Freeman Mbowe, is involved in the drug trafficking ring are intended to silence those critical of President John Magufuli's government. The governor of Dar es Salaam, Paul Makonda, made the allegations against Mr. Mbowe and more than 60 other people during a news conference this past Wednesday. Chadema deputy spokesman Peter Msigwa says the accusations are a political slander by a government that he said is not being run properly.
As opposition, we feel that this is a political ploy, is a political slander. We believe that the country is not governed properly. We have incompetent people in most of the positions, especially this region commander police and the region commissioner and district commissioner. That's why we are facing this kind of challenges. So it's really unfair to accuse a reputable person like Freeman Mbowe for drug trafficking without any evidence. We feel that this matter will end up injuring innocent people and their reputations.
Mr. Msigwa, has there been any kind of legal or law enforcement investigation of Mr. Mbowe before this allegation is made, or this is just coming from out of the blue sky?
It just came from the blue, someone on TVs and just mentioning names, that he doesn't have that power. There's no summons. You know, according to our law, the police have to investigate and I have to take you according to our constitutional law. But someone on TV just mentioning names and accusing people without any evidence. This is something strange, and we feel that it's really dangerous that the country is not governed properly.
What does this have to do with the country not being governed properly?
You know, for example, members of parliament from the opposition have been arrested several times, and they have been refused to get the bail without any reason. So we feel that the president is insecure. He does want to be challenged. And he's trying to scare people, especially we opposition party, so that he can do whatever he wants without being challenged.
Chadema is saying that this is an attempt to silence those who are opposed to the government. Do you really believe that?
Yeah, I'm part of what we are saying. We believe that he's trying to silence, scare us. When you mentioned Freeman Mbowe that he is a drug dealer, and he's been in politics for more than 20 years, leading this party, and we are doing very well trying to challenge the government, and we are almost removing the government in power through the ballot. So they are trying to stop us in whatever they can, using all means. And we believe this is, as I said, this is a political ploy trying to make us look bad for their advantage.
So is Mr. Mbowe supposed to, what, turn himself in, or what's going to happen today, Friday? Is he going to see the police?
He is not going to see the police tomorrow because the guy who asked him to go to the police, he doesn't have those power. And according to our constitution, if the parliament is on session, and if the parliament is on, we're supposed to do the parliament business. So Mr. Boy is in Dodoma, so we are proceeding with our business, our parliament business. Unless they ask him to go to the police properly, according to our law and regulation. Otherwise, he's not going to go. They would rather use force to take him there.
Peter Msigwa is a member of Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Standing for Daybreak Africa, Sposen, here is Samson Omale in Johannesburg, South Africa. And good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking released on Thursday as African Cup of Nations winners Cameroon leaped 29 places to occupy the 33rd spot in the world, moving from the 12th position to the 3rd in Africa. But Africa's top-ranked team remains Egypt, who lost in the 2017 AFCON final but are ranked 25th in the world but number 1 in Africa. Nations Cup quarterfinalist Senegal, the top African side last month, are second in the February ranking and 31st in general. Tunisia is ranked 4th in Africa, DR Congo 5th, Burkina Faso is number 6, while Nigeria occupies the 7th position. Ghana is number 8, Ivory Coast is number 9, while Morocco wraps up the top 10. 10. Africa's premier club competition, the CAF Champions League, will this weekend begin its 2017 campaign with 23 preliminary round first leg matches taking place across the continent this weekend. 9 clubs, including reigning champions Mamelodi Sundowns, have been given a bye through to the next round. Sundowns will face the winners of the tie between Uganda's KCCA and Primeiro de Agosto of Angola. The teams will meet in the first leg of their tie in Kampala later this afternoon. Elsewhere, surprise Ghanaian champions Wa'al Stars will take their first steps in what they hope will be a long and successful campaign when they face Libya's Al Ahli Tripoli, while Zambia's Zanaco will hope to follow in the footsteps of compatriots Zesco United, who reached the semifinals last year when they battled APR of Rwanda. Nigeria's Rivers United will face a tough opening match day away to Malian giants Real Bamako, while Stade Malien will battle against Liberia's Barak Young Controllers. The return leg matches will be played on the weekend of the 17th to the 19th of February. In the CAF Confederations Cup, which also begins this weekend, 40 teams will battle to advance into the first round, where 12 seeded clubs, including former winners CS Sfaxien and 2016 Champions League semi-finalist Zesco United, will be slugging it out. Some of the big teams in action this weekend include two-time African champions JS Kabylie of Algeria, who faced Liberia's Monrovia club Breweries on Friday, while their compatriots MC Alger will have a tough tie against Ghana's Berchem United. The return leg matches will be played on the weekend of the 17th to the 19th of February. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson Omale in Cape Town, South Africa. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 10th. On this day in 1992, renowned African-American author Alex Haley died. Haley became famous for his publication of the novel Roots, which traces his ancestry back to Africa and covers 7 American generations as they are taken slaves to the United States. The book was adapted to a television series and woke up an interest in genealogy, particularly among African-Americans. Also on this day, 1989, Ronald Brown was elected national chairman of the U.S. Democratic Party and became the first African-American to hold the post. On this day, 1927, African-American opera singer Leontine Price was born in Laurel, Mississippi. She achieved international fame for her brilliant voice. Price performed in many operas, including Aida, a story about an Ethiopian princess. On this day in 1964, the U.S. Congress passed the Civil Rights Act. The law prohibited any state or local government office from discriminating against black people in employment and public accommodations. Also on this day in 1992, former world heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson was found guilty of raping Desiree Washington, a Miss Black America contestant. He was given a 10-year prison term with 4 years suspended. On this day in African history, in 1985, Nelson Mandela rejected South African President P.W. Botha's offer of a conditional release. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 10th. Congratulations to Anita Woma Willie Buka of Sky Radio 106.6 FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone, Abraham Lang of the National Root Crops Research Institute in Plateau State, Nigeria, and James Chidovu of Deza in Malawi. You are the winners of our February 9th question, who is the first African-American woman to host a national television talk show? The answer, Oprah Gil Winfrey. Now, here's our question for today, February 10th. Which African-American wrote the novel The Color Purple? Once again, which African-American wrote the novel The Color Purple? Send your answers to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Friday, February 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, love and Valentine's Day in America. Do you have a Valentine? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing love and Valentine. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.